In the words of Samuel L. Jackson in Jurassic Park, hold on to your butts. Let me tell you, we are about to get into it. Stephen Van Patten, aka SVP, starting off this episode of Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans. As always, I am joined by Kirk Johnson and the illustrious Mark Abbott. Our guest tonight is basically, well, what can I say? He's an extraordinary stand-up comic, podcast host, and kind of a personal hero. That's because he did something most people who work behind the scenes in live TV broadcasting would be deathly afraid to do. He defied an NDA, perhaps the biggest NDA ever. And he did it because after six seasons working behind the scenes of Celebrity Apprentice, he knew the horrible mistake this country was collectively making when it elected Donald Trump as president. Along with his podcast, He Really Spills Tea, and his car rants seen far and wide thanks to Instagram. There is a lot more to the man, of course, so let's get to it, fellas. Let's give a big Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans welcome to Noel Castler.
Yay, yay!
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It's a pleasure to be here, man.
Noel, you know, as I think I told you in sort of our recent emails and whatever, this particular podcast started off as three middle-aged black dudes talking about horror, sci-fi, and, you know, and all that, you know, like Marvel movies and all this kind of stuff. And then Trump got elected and we got in our feelings a little bit. So we ended up kind of going back and forth.
Yeah. You said a little bit?
A little bit. I did say a little bit. Well, you know.
A little bit.
No, all right. There was a couple times we were probably on the verge of nervous breakdowns. All right. That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah.
You in particular, motherfucker. So anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They voted for him. He's a president. Oh man, you motherfuckers is crazy. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I think I tell the story every once in a while. You know, shit, I was doing the BET election special in 2016 that night. And BET just kind of like pulled the plug after they didn't even announce a winner. And then the next thing I know, I'm in a bar with like shooting like four shots of tequila. I don't even feel it. And I'm making out with this random Puerto Rican woman I met. It was just a bizarre night. But Noel, look, here's the thing. It's not 2016 anymore. It is 2021. And I know this question I'm about to hit you with, I know this is all you can really give me is a speculative answer here, but all right, we've got Trump guilty of various things. Matt Gaetz, sexual predator, Gosser, made a video of himself killing somebody that he works with. You got Boebert, tweeting locations for insurrectionists on January 6th. You got all this stuff that's fairly proven. And here we are, at least three of us sitting here right now that could go to a bodega right now, steal a can of tomato sauce and be in Rikers within a matter of hours. No, why isn't somebody being arrested?
Right, exactly. And not get out of Rikers. Do you know what I mean? Let alone if you posed with your family yesterday, all of y'all holding submachine guns for your Christmas card and tweeted it out a week after a mass shooting, right? They're not getting arrested because there's two sets of justice in this country, you know, and that's what people are waking up to, how it's been forever. But now we're sort of stretched to the limit. It's so egregious, you know, and Trump has gotten away with stuff forever. You know, the fact that he hasn't been arrested for January 6th, he should have been arrested. We found out last week he had COVID and went to the debate with Biden.
That's a
Twitter. I know the dude. He's the kind of dude to be like, I'm going to take out Biden. Watch his shit. I'm going to give him COVID. He'll be dead by November and I'll win. That's his thinking. That's the guy I know 100%. That's what he thought. That's why his kids showed up late so they didn't have to get tested at the debate.
Mm-hmm.
Why they sat in the front row and pulled off their masks. that's just one of the crimes, you know, that you could bust his ass on, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm so sick of people, and it's usually, I'm a 50-year-old white man, it's usually middle-aged white people that are like, hold on, the Justice Department is just dotting their I's and crossing their T's to make sure they have a rock-solid case, right? Well, how come they don't do that with Kalief Browder, right, who was thrown in Rikers Island for allegedly stealing a backpack? Right. Yes. It's guilty until you might get proven innocent. Right. Yeah. If you're not a wealthy white person in this country.
Yes.
Right. So the fact that that is still happening, that our Justice Department hasn't answered the need to balance the scales of justice. Like, if there's ever a time you needed to be like, there's a new sheriff in town, we're kicking some ass. You know, we're arresting somebody, at the very least, Matt Gaetz, who was paying for Venmo and cocaine and stuff with underage girls to have sex with them. Like, come on.
There's a digital financial trail.
Hey.
Yeah.
And that broke in March, and he's still walking around tweeting. And here's what I tell people. Time is not on your side, because these dudes are building an army with this white supremacist stuff. They were marching on the mall yesterday and the Lincoln Memorial, you know, where I stood at President Obama's inauguration when we had that concert on HBO, right? And now 12 years later, they're marching in broad daylight in D.C., white supremacists. Like, man, you have to send a message, because time's not on your side. And what's going to happen is we're going to come into the midterms next year, and then it's going to be like, well, it's too late. It's political. You know, if we start arresting people now. Mm-hmm. So it upsets me to no end, because I was telling people during the Mueller investigation, I'm like, you don't got all day. This ain't the old days where you just take 3 years. You need to stop this dude. And what happened to that? Barr came in and shut it down, right? And then lied about the results 6 weeks before the rest of us got to see what was in the report. Yes. And then the thing was so goddamn complicated, nobody really got it anyway. And then he left detailed instructions how Trump could be brought up on charges, right, after he left office, and
after he left office,
and Garland's done nothing with that, right? So it's so disheartening, and I'll shut up in a minute, but it's frustrating, and it's why I speak out, because I'm like, wake up, people. And again, on Twitter all day long, like, middle-aged white people, like, you just gotta wait. You know, wait, they're just crossing their I's and T's. I'm like, where does your patience come from? It comes from a place of privilege. Right? It comes from reading, like, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird and thinking some patriarchal white guy was always going to save the day. That ain't how it works. Right? That ain't how it works. That might be your crush, you know, watching Law and Order. I know I'm a white guy, so I can say this shit. I see this line, because I grew up in PG. I grew up in PG County, right outside of DC in the 70s and 80s. Yeah, my mom went to prison. My mom was caught up in drug addiction, robbed banks, bro. Went to federal prison.
That's like, right.
My mom's in prison. So, and I lived in PG. Like, I was the only white kid in my neighborhood. So I saw the two sets of justice, you know, and I went through the things that people would associate, you know, with growing up in a troubled situation. And it happened to me, you know, and I knew instinctually that I was going to get a better chance just because of the color of my skin. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I saw early how unbalanced it was, because I saw Reagan come in. This was during the Reagan years.
Oh, Lord.
They cut school lunch programs. You know, they basically created, you know, homelessness in D.C.
Homelessness, yeah. Oh. Deregulation.
Right. St. Elizabeth, you know, all the mental institutions. It was like war on black folks. All my friends I grew up with, watching sci-fi, watching horror movies, going to see Star Wars with, collecting action figures. When my mom went to prison, I moved up here to Westchester County with my grandparents, right? So all of a sudden, now I'm in the suburbs. You put me in a polo shirt, I fit right in. You know, you go and seen and shit. Yeah. Like, but people didn't know where I was from. But my hood, so to speak, when I went back to it in the late 80s, all my friends were either locked up or dead. And I was like, what happened? And they were like, well, they got caught up in drugs. And I'm like, well, they don't grow cocaine in Greenbelt, Maryland. You know what I mean? Where did this shit come from? Do you know what I'm saying? It came from that same war. And then what came next? The war on drugs, which was what? It was a war on black people. It was like, let's lock them all up. And so many white folks were willing to look the other way because it benefited them. to mm-hmm. not have squeegee men in New York City and make it safer. Yeah. So the people in the leafy suburbs didn't care what Giuliani and all these goons were doing. And they didn't care about, you know, young people of color getting thrown up at a wall against a wall and searched for no reason.
Yeah.
Right. Because it didn't affect their way of life. And what's happening now is somebody like Trump came along and exploited all that because he was so criminal. There was no sense of decorum or honor system with him. He was just smash and grab. I'm taking all the shit. What are you going to do about it? And I think folks are waking up to the fact, shit, we can't really do anything about it. Right. That's what that Kyle Rittenhouse shit was. That judge threw that trial from the moment he walked into that courtroom.
Man.
So I'll shut up. That's my rant. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? That's where my shit is fueled from. Just being honest about seeing the world around you and seeing what this bullshit is and trying to wake up other folks that still have those blinders on of privilege. You know, there's people that are liberal and don't think of themselves as racist, and they may not be, but they don't know how conditioned they are to how beneficial their position is in this society by no other reason than the color of their skin.
Yeah.
Right. And when you have people living in denial about that, and then you have other people living in resentment with it, you know, your poor kind of like uneducated, non-college educated white folks that are just all pissed off in the suburbs and don't know why they can't make $60 an hour in a factory anymore like their grandpappy did.
Right. You know, and they're not mad at the politicians or the industrialists. They're mad at the rappers. Exactly. They're mad at the rappers and athletes who actually have to fucking work for that shit.
who have to work for it. And here's the part that's overlooked when it comes to rappers and athletes. They don't live in a vacuum, one. And two, they're making if the rapper is making $100, the person that owns the label.
Right.
That owns the cat who pays him. Music.
The cat who pays him.
And the same thing with the athlete.
Yeah.
You know, I remember a while ago, there was some football game and somebody left a mic open somewhere. So as dudes are running up and down the field, somebody said nigger. And and then there was this whole big controversy. Should athletes be more careful what they're do and they're out on the field and this and this and that. Me personally, I'm more concerned about them being treated like niggas than when they say niggas.
Say it, niggas, right?
You know,
yeah.
But the thing is, it's like not everybody has that perspective. Not everybody is thinking about the fact that you know, like that Chevy commercial. Or, Mark's favorite, my man Sam, you know, Shepard, when he's doing those truck commercials, you know, all the money he's making, like we're not focusing on that. We worried about, you know, the dude that's out there getting his head bashed in chasing a football.
Right.
Right.
You know,
what do they call it? Concussion?
CTE.
CTE.
Can I say one thing about that, man?
Of course you can.
Because I worked on the Super Bowl for like 15 years. I did the NBA All-Star game for 15 years, the weekend too, for 15 years. Not the weekend, the singer. Like, the you know, it's a weekend, you know, it's like three events and stuff. Same with the football. Like, there's 90 guys on that team you never even heard of, right? You see all the famous dudes. You don't see the guy who only made 140 grand a year for 3 years and then can't walk. And isn't going to know his grandkid's name because he was just a lineman, third string, whatever, right?
Mm-hmm. And they don't talk about that shit.
Right, exactly. It's always the figureheads. And one of the lessons I got in life about the subtle racism that permeates the NFL, which is a gangsta organization, okay? Mm-hmm. The guy, Roger Goodell, is gangsta AF. He was the limo driver for the old commissioner. I forget what his name is, but he was the dude's driver and then became the head of the NFL.
Oh, that's I did not know that.
Wow.
The old guy, I don't know his name. I'm not a big sports guy, but whatever. Mm. The famous commissioner, this new dude, Roger, was his driver. That's how he started his career in the NFL. And he knew the deal, like it's being an enforcer. But let me just give you this anecdote. So I did the halftime show, you know, I won't say the name of the producers. You know all the people, Stephen, you know, and I did it for like 15 years. And to the end of the run, it was not that many years ago, the Seahawks were playing the Patriots. Okay. Mm. And I don't remember where we were somewhere out west, right? Mm. And it was like the fourth quarter, and I'm sitting in the Vom, you know, the little hallway, and I'd been with what's his name? Lenny Kravitz, who was part of the halftime show. Lenny performed, right? And I remember we were standing there in halftime waiting to go on, and Marshawn Lynch walked by, and he's like, oh, shit, Lenny Kravitz. Yo, let me get my picture with you. And I'm taking selfies of them and shit.
Right.
I'm like, this is awesome, right? So they finished, and I like Marshawn Lynch. I just like his whole attitude, right? Mm-hmm. He was the one who saw through that going to press day and playing along and all that bullshit. So the NFL already had his number, and this will make sense in a second. Mm-hmm. So they come down to the last play of the game, right? They're on like the 1 yard line, right? They get a first down, the Seahawks. You're like, wow, the Seahawks are going to win, right? They're going to hand the ball to Marshawn and get a touchdown. And they don't, they pass the ball. Right. And the Patriots guy intercepts it. And that's the ball game. Right. So how did they know that they were going to pass it? Belichick had prepared for that because he knew in that position, Pete Carroll would rather pass the ball than give it to Marshawn Lynch, because then he would have had to make Marshawn the MVP, not Russell Graham, the quarterback, who's also African-American, but more telegenic, right?
But he's friendly on the camera. He's friendly to the camera.
Bingo. So the psychology of that moment was Belichick knew in that position, because you wake up a two-year-old and say, what are you going to do? You got, you know, it's first down on the 1 yard line. You're going to run the ball. I could have gotten that ball across the line, you know, with three attempts. My 5'7" ass would have hopped over there, right? So it goes down. I'm in shock. Marshawn comes walking off. He's the first player off the field, and he's carrying his helmet. And he looks at me and the other people around us and no one in particular at the same time. And he goes, y'all motherfuckers could have won the game, but you didn't want to give me the ball. Y'all motherfuckers could have won the game, but you didn't want to give me the ball. Wow. He knew exactly why. And in that moment, I saw something. You know, I saw how they were preventing this man from living what he was put on earth to do. Because let's face it, that was the best guy in the world to have on your team. Like Jerome Bettis retired, but the guy's a truck. He's going to get through that line, you know?
Right.
He knew it. And you prevented him from being excellent, right? You prevented black excellence in a way because it didn't fit the corporate white mindset of what the NFL and a champion should look like. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a hard thing, and there's subtlety there, but I saw it in that moment. I saw how you could achieve so much in this country and still have somebody kind of having their foot on your neck, so to speak, right? And that's a fucking shame. And it's the same thing with Colin Kaepernick, who I saw play in a Super Bowl. And he was great. How many great passes did he have in him that all of us got denied because the man hasn't had a job in 3 or 4 years?
Yeah.
And that's what happens, you know, because money's involved and people play along and they don't want to talk about that stuff. And my bigger mouth, I'll talk about anything, you know?
Right.
I mean, everyone's getting all quiet now. Maybe I should.
We just simmering.
That's where this country's at, you know? Like Colin Kaepernick is a bad dude. The guy's freaking, you want your kid to grow up and be that guy.
And I haven't had a chance to meet him myself, and he's actually a very nice guy. He's also a very attentive boyfriend, because Nessa, you know, I work with her at MTV every once in a while when she hosts these, and you'll appreciate this, Noel, you know, she hosts those Teen Mom reunion specials. So you know a little something about reunion specials. As crazy and off the cuff and bananas as those are, you know, every once in a while I'll turn around while I'm stage managing and I'll see Colin Kaepernick just kind of hanging out waiting for his lady, you know what I'm saying? And he's just, you know, as my man Stu from whatchamacallit, ESPN used to say, cool as the other side of the pillow. Right. You know, nice guy, you know.
Yeah.
But I get it. And, you know, the whole thing with sports in this country and how we can be rooting for a dude, you know, who's representing the city, but then at any given moment, things could go toxic. I remember, here's a good sports thing. I remember when, LeBron James when he first left Cleveland and he went to the Miami Heat. And it's Miami Heat's first game against Cleveland at Cleveland, right? Man, there was so much booing. I thought Farrakhan had gotten on the field. I was like, what the fuck? Like, what the hell? Like, people had, like, made T-shirts, the Lion King, and, you know, but it was like lying or whatever. Right. They were out in the parking lot burning stuff. I was like, really? So dude can't. Now, don't get me wrong. That whole thing where who's that horrible sportscaster? He was talking when they were doing that whole, maybe I'll go to this team. Maybe I'll go to that team. There was this whole thing that happened before that game. And that was obnoxious. But, you know, because if you go and go to a team, just go to a team. Like, really? Like, why are we putting on this whole big soap opera with it? Because now you're just irritating people. But thankfully, he stopped doing that kind of stuff. And now he just, you know, he wants to go to a team. He just goes, you know, and whatever. But that whole, like, you know, how dare you have agency? Like, that shit was like, oh, wow. Like, it was just like that. That was in its own way. That, yeah. And it was kind of like a wake up. You know? Yeah,
because he needed to achieve his own excellence. He needed to be a champion. He wasn't going to do it in Cleveland at that time, right?
Not
he
at that time.
So, and he needed to use his skills. You got to stretch to become the athlete you know, he knew he could be. And what did he do? He came home. He built his foundation in Akron, which is one of the most incredible things any athlete has done in terms of giving back to the community. That's no joke.
Legit.
Like, the dude should run for office someday, not to get sidetracked. But that's the kind of leadership we need, really, that he understands stuff on a level that, you know, should be celebrated.
I agree. But of course, then a Fox News person will be all over that. Horrible blonde lady's name? The one that was literally on some shut up and dribble shit.
The one that comes on at 10 o'clock, I think.
I can't remember her name.
I don't either.
Excuse my language, hateful bitch.
Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
Not to be confused with
Laura Ingram. Yes. Laura Ingram.
That's
Laura Ingram.
It, exactly. Yes.
Actually, LeBron should probably open up his own media center, media station. Yeah. Start doing news.
He should.
Start doing some news. BET ain't doing that shit no more.
Well, you know, and that's the sad thing, because I was there. You know, so many years ago, stage managing BET Tonight with Ed Gordon, BET News across the hall from, that reminds me of something else I want to get in with you on, Noel. You know, just the whole deconstruction of BET, so to speak, because when Bob Johnson sold BET to Viacom and everything, we lost the potential to have like a serious voice. Not just music videos, not just twerking, not just, you know, reality shows and shit like that. We lost a chance for real agency there. Not to mention the fact we also lost a chance for men of color to become local one and local 600 stagehands.
That's a great point.
And things like that, you know.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. So I happen to catch the job at BET Tonight with Ed Gordon just as the sale had kind of come through. And what I, you know, the way I'm going to segue this is we're going to talk about where the boardroom for Trump in Celebrity Apprentice was, because some people, I don't think they all know the truth of that, Noel. But, you know, the reason I'm kind of weaving this is, for example, BET had 106 in Park.
Right.
What a lot of folks don't know is that 106 in Park was only shot at 106th Street and Park Avenue for the first of however many goddamn seasons it was. And then after
first
that,
season.
Yes. And then after that, CBS Viacom went to BET and was like, we don't care what you name your little hip hop show. You're going to bring this over to 57th Street. which, you know, was comedy in and of itself because, you know, I'm in one studio at CBS doing BET Tonight. We finish the show. I just happen to come out in the hallway in a break. All the 106 and Park dudes are out in the hallway. It's like, well, what are y'all doing in the hallway? Ain't you supposed to be shooting your show? It's like, well, Nelly's a guest and somebody forgot to tell him that we're at 57th and 10th. So he's at 106 trying to drive back here now. And, you know, it was like the farce of it all. Right. You know, you name this hip hop show, this you know, after this cool address in Harlem. And it's a perfectly mm-hmm. good studio.
Yeah, it's
on 106, as I'm sure you know, as I'm sure.
In Park.
Yes, exactly. Metropolis.
Shit. I worked there.
Perfectly.
Yeah.
Yes, we all have, I think. Perfectly good studio. Yeah. And then to have this hip hop show moved to 57th Street, and then to have stagehands work on that show so long that they were able to retire. their kids are in charge of the studios now. You know, all of this could have benefited our community in some kind of way in terms of just ownership, in terms of jobs, just basics. But obviously that was not the only, like, television is guilty of multiple lies, as we can all attest. But since you worked all those so many seasons of The Apprentice, Celebrity Apprentice, as it eventually morphed into, let's talk for a second about the boardroom that Trump would grill these people and, you know, be this like man on the mountain.
Right.
You
know, where,
so it was it like, for all intents and purposes, the viewers of the show were supposed to believe this was happening in some boardroom in one of Trump's many right. buildings.
Yeah.
Where exactly was this happening, Noel?
The first one, the first season of Celebrity Apprentice, because I mm-hmm. didn't do the apprentice shit. My friends did it. If they ain't celebrities, I ain't showing up. You know, my friends did the one where it's just regular people. I don't have a skill for that. But SNL, Studio 8H, Saturday Night Live. That's where we shot the first fake wow. boardroom. That's the first time I saw him crap his pants. That's the first time I saw him snort Adderall in the host dressing room. Which, you've ever been to 8H, you know where that is. And mm-hmm. he comes out with the chunks flying out of his nose, just like he did in press conferences at President of the United States, right? And we had the after party downstairs, and he was using the N-word like he did forever behind mm-hmm. the scenes, even back to Celebrity Apprentice. He yeah. called my friend Holly Robinson Pete the N-word because they wanted them to, she was the obvious winner. I'll give yes. you another anecdote, right? So we switched. SNL was the first make-believe. And by the way, Lauren Michaels is getting honored tonight at the Kennedy Center Honors. And it's not to say that SNL isn't, like, you know, an institution in this country. It is, but political totally satire. Is. But look, he lent out his studio to, you know, to, right. to Donald Trump. And Jeff Zucker was running the network at the time, NBC mm-hmm. Entertainment, who went to yeah. CNN and basically helped hand Trump the election in 2015, right? And didn't say a word about everything everybody saw. So we shot it at 8H SNL. Then we went to Skirball Center, which is down at NYU, right? They have a studio soundstage there.
Yes,
we
yes.
Wow, down there. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's where the Holly Robinson story comes in. And this is a great story that sort of illustrates a point about just how, because Trump was like not involved in that shit. He would show up for like an hour a day, you know, and they'd be like, you're picking this guy, you right. know, this guy won all his contests. And mm-hmm. the contest would be like, who has a good pop-up shop in Times Square? Is it Meatloaf or is it Little John or whoever, you know, was the contestant that week, right? So the episode we did down at NYU, it came down to Holly Robinson Pete and a guy named Brett Michaels, who's the singer in a band called Poison.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just by happenstance, you know, I did the Tony Awards for 20 years. So earlier that year, I was assigned to Poison because they were performing on the Tony Awards, right? Mm-hmm. The whole band. And that dude didn't come to rehearsal and he didn't learn the blocking. So we're doing the live show and I'm standing stage right, getting ready to catch him. He was supposed to come off stage right because they're a band, and you know what I mean?
Right.
And I'm standing there and the scrim starts to come down and the singer Brett Michaels starts walking downstage for the audience. because it was probably the first time he heard people cheering for him in 10 years. You know what I mean? So he got like caught up in the moment. Shit was like, oh, they like me. This is just like 1987.
And he starts talking
down. And a stagehand, you know, a union guy is like, no, did you tell him? And I was like, he didn't come to rehearsal. And we're all watching and we're like, oh my God. And the scrim came down on his head, bro. Almost took his head off, knocked him out on the stage. Paramedics came, took him off. He went to the hospital, right? Self-inflicted wound from not following directions, right? So this is June. So cut to almost a year later, we're in May and we're shooting down at the Skirball Center this season of Celebrity Apprentice. And he's one of the contestants. He barely showed up for like 3 weeks during the show because he had all these medical problems, which aren't his fault. He's got diabetes and all this other shit. And he had like an aneurysm from that injury. So we had to have an EMT on the side of the stage in case the dude flatlined during the taping. That's how like messed up this guy was. And not to mention, he's injured because he didn't follow directions and come to his job, right? And ostensibly, the show is supposed to be about hiring a corporate officer to represent your company, somebody with skills and acumen, right? So Trump shows up high, stupid, like he always is, and they present him with this thing, like, because they tell him, the producers are like, this is who won. This is who you're going to say won tonight. You're fired. This one's the winner. And they said, Holly Robinson Pete has won everything. She's obviously, she's very smart. She's incredibly well spoken. Like, there's no surprise in that. Who is, you know what I mean? She's very, like, she's in the corporate world, in the real world, you would trip over yourself to hire somebody like Holly Robinson Pete. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even from a cynical standpoint, just because it would look so good. Do you know what I mean? She's beautiful. Like, she runs her own business. She's married to a Hall of Fame, you know, quarterback or whatever.
Right. That's right.
Right. You know what I mean? Like,
Trump, so she had all the, she had all the checks. She had all the boxes checks.
God just wrapped it up in a bow and like, here's your winner. You know, anybody would have picked her. And Trump was like, no. And he picked Bret Michaels, the dude with the bandana on his head who didn't come to rehearsal, who we had an EMT standing on the side of the stage. And he said, they want me to pick the N word. And he didn't say N word to his buddy. He said that kind of shit out loud. The dude was like Eazy-E or something. Do you know what I mean? Like, he would use that word in front of other white people. And lots of people knew that. Lots of people knew that. And I got friends that were audio guys on the earlier shows, right? The Apprentice before Celebrity. And they got hours of tapes of that shit. But nobody knew he was going to become president. You know, it wasn't, so it wasn't like you were making a dummy copy in 2005, like, oh, when this guy ends up being president, I'm going to release this.
Nobody, you know, so, and yeah, nobody's, let's be honest, sensible people. And here, for me personally, I have been blessed in a sense, and I'm not trying to front, like, you know, every white person I've met in television is like saintly, unracist, you know, full on contributing to, you know, Southern poverty and, you know, and everything like that. But for the most part, you know, one of the good things about, you know, being in the situations that I've been in is I've been around people like you, and enough of that. So that when 2016 came along, I didn't believe this was possible. I didn't see it coming. Right. I did not see it coming until, like I said, I was literally standing on a soundstage doing a BET election special, and people are text messaging me because back at ABC, Joy Behar is getting drunk and all this other shit. I'm getting all this, like, you know, like live, like, you know, blow by blow of Joy Behar losing her fucking mind on the phone. Like, and everything went from cautiously optimistic to like dumpster fire within a matter of hours. And I just didn't see it coming. You know what's crazy? You know who did see it coming? My friends at work in the prison system that work as, like, you know, corrections officers and things like that. I would have random conversations with them, you know, over 2015, early 2016. I'd be like, yeah, man. And my dumb ass is like, yeah, I'll be glad when this is over because this is like stupid. And they're like, yo, SVP, I don't know, son. Like, hey, you should hear some of these white cats at work, man. They think this is, like, they acted like this is their second coming, son. And I'm like, out of here. This is fine. And this is this. And I think I avoided talking to them cats for like a good 6 months after the election. I was like, yeah, motherfuckers was right. So you know what? I'm just gonna go hide over here for a couple of months.
You know what's interesting? No, during the entire Trump fiasco, because that's what it was. Yeah. I couldn't help but keep quoting Alfred from The Dark Knight when he tells Batman the story about the guy they were trying to get in the woods. And the guy was stealing jewels and they didn't know why he was doing it. And he says to Batman, some men just like to watch the world burn.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he adds to it about the mob when they hired the Joker. They said they were so concerned with getting rid of you that they put their trust in something that they didn't understand. I think there's a group of them that understood exactly what they were doing when they put him in power. Mm-hmm. And I do think there is that group of people out there that really thought, you know, almost a juvenile thought that, oh, you know what? If he's not a politician, we don't have to worry about corrupt issues. And all I kept thinking was like, did any of you happen to go down to Atlantic City and notice that he is completely not only bankrupt that city, but none of his hotels are in, like before he went into office, there was nothing this man owned that wasn't already in bankruptcy or foreclosure. And I'm like, I don't understand how any of you thought, and I'm talking about the people who legitimately thought it was a good idea to put him in office. Just really like, you know what, we want to drain, you know, that bought into that whole, if it's not a politician, we're better off. But you really did think that a man who stayed in bankruptcy was going to be able to take you where in right. this country? Mm-hmm. What was he supposed to do? And it's just, to me, it's just crazy that, you know, we talked earlier about the privilege, about the ideology that, you know, I can do whatever I want and there's no ramifications or repercussions for it. And there's all of these laws and things on the book that technically saved us, I guess you could say, from going completely down the hole, but are not being used.
Yeah.
And I'm at a point now, like even I've watched this whole fiasco with this shooting. Mm-hmm. Last week. And I listened to a lot of the youth. They got on and they said, you know, we had these elections and we went out there and we did what we were supposed to do. And if part of me is like, no, you actually, what you did was you put the right people you needed in office. You didn't get rid of the wrong ones.
Right.
The people you need to get rid of, the guy that's 82 years old and still in the Senate, that's the guy you need to get rid of, you know, and that's the guy you can't get rid of because no matter how many times you guys go to the polls, there's that army of people that are still going to keep this man in office.
Yeah.
Right.
And these people are not going to change their minds about any of this. And now that they know, I think now that they're comfortable in knowing that nothing can happen to them, this is what we're seeing now. This is just a direct result. You know, we got Roe versus Wade about to get overturned because why? Because we won't stack the deck.
Right.
I don't understand that. I'm like, we have the power to do that. Let's stack the deck. Like literally this week, I would have, if I were president, I'd be like, I got three nominees I'm putting up there and they're going right. in. Right. They're going in. And it's like, well, we got to do it. No, we don't have to. I'm signing executive orders. We're going to start, like, you guys need to start playing the game the way they are. And I said to these fellas at one point, in a dark way, Trump was the best thing that ever happened to this country because people finally woke up.
Mm-hmm.
They woke up one morning and they realized that the so-called perfect world that they were living in doesn't exist.
Right.
And now the question is, how do we fix this problem? How do we clean this up now? before it gets.
In the words of Sean Connery in The Untouchables, what are you prepared to do?
Well, exactly. You know, well said, Mark. You know, well said, sir, because that's exactly it. Trump was hired to break things. That's what Trump does. He's like the kind of kid who pulls the wings off of butterflies. You hire Trump when you want to fuck something up. Okay. Mm-hmm. And Putin wanted to fuck up this country. He wanted to divide us and destabilize us. And the people that support that in this country, the Koch brothers and all these big corporations that want basically a feudal system where they have an endless supply of serfs that work in their factories and die young and don't have to cost any money on Social Security, that's fine with them. You know, and Trump is built like a white trash army, for lack of a better term. You know, all these rubes are lining up for that shit. They don't know they're the ones who are going to suffer the most. You know, people in the cities, we're going to be better off because we have access to multiculturalism and education and shit. You don't have that out in fucking Chick-fil-A land or whatever the hell it is, you know. But so Trump was high. Man, I'm never going to, the white people ain't going to, I ain't going to no more barbecues after this, right?
Wait, white folks don't have barbecues. they got egg salad. They got egg salad parties with raisins.
No more mayonnaise for me, yo. But
you invited. You invited to our cookout. You good? Yeah.
Give me a point, man. But anyway, but you make some excellent points, and like people didn't see what it was coming. I also toured with bands. I was a road manager for bands. So in between, like working on President Obama's inauguration, I'd be on the road with, you know, the Rolling Stones or Bruce Springsteen, Crosby, Stills and Nash. So I toured this country and I saw how these guys were talking. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like Steven said, I'd be backstage and dudes would be like saying the N-word. They're like, I ain't letting that guy come for my guns. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? You know what I mean? The anti-abortion stuff on the side of the highways. But I think educated liberal sort of politicians took it for granted. Like you said, Mark, they thought they were going to win. I talked to Hillary's campaign, okay? A colleague of mine and Stevens, who worked on Barack Obama's campaign, ended up working for Hillary Clinton on her campaign. Very accomplished young woman. I won't give up her name to protect her. But so she called me up. I was doing a gig with Springsteen at the town hall, the New Yorker Festival. And she was like, Noel, I've seen your Facebook. Like, you're willing to tell these secrets, you know, about Trump? And I was like, hell yeah, we have to, you know, and I couldn't get anybody else to do it. So she goes, will you talk to Hillary's campaign? And I said, hell yeah. So I talked to David Duberstein, one of their campaign managers. This is October of 2016, right? And I told him all I knew. And he put me in touch with People Magazine. They were going to do like a cover story on Trump's sexual assault. They didn't seem to care too much about the drug shit. They were like, the sexual assault is going to take him out. And this is right when we were having our conversations, the Access Hollywood tapes broke. And the mood in their camp was like, oh, we got this now. You know what I mean? There's no way, because you got him on tape saying, grab him by the pussy. Like, so I talked to him and they listened to me, but they were kind of like, yeah, we got this. You know what I mean? We're good. And then, of course, we all know what happened with James Comey, you know, a week before the election and all that stuff that they didn't foresee. And I don't think they foresaw losing like they did. And it was a place of privilege. You know, they weren't counting on the resentment that Trump tapped into. Nobody knew about the extent of their cheating. And I remember, you know, that when I did that, the Celebrity Apprentice I just told you about, the one at NYU, we did the after party in Trump Soho, right? When he still had it. Remember, it was like, it wasn't even in Soho. It was like a Tribeca and shit, and he tried to pretend it was in Soho. But we did the party there. It was all Russian nationals. There was a guy named Felix Sater, and he was working the room. Ivanka and Jared to all these straight up Brooklyn gangsta looking dudes with like chicks wearing fur coats in May. You know what I mean? Like 20-year-old girls getting out of the SUV in a fucking mink stole, and you're like, it's 80 degrees out. But like, I saw something nefarious underneath the surface, you know, and I've lived in New York since the 80s. So we all knew Trump was mobbed up, you know, that's who he was, you know, but they didn't see it coming. And now it's broken to a point that you have to do what Mark said. You don't get to go back to the world the way it was pre-Trump, right? No. You don't get to be a virgin again. Pardon my French, but someone fucks you that hard, like, you ain't a virgin again. You know, right. And the Dems need to start playing hardball because there's nothing left. Because yeah. while we're fucking around talking about this, they're doing gerrymandering in all these districts, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
You see yeah. how much damage Marjorie Taylor Greene, Boebert, little freaking forehead guy, little roller Nazi dude from North Carolina. Oh. Right? You see how much damage four of these guys are doing. Imagine when there's 40 of them in mm-hmm. 2 years. Imagine Ooh. 40 of those QAnon freaks doing nothing but disrupting because they don't yeah. pass legislation, right? They're no, just trolls. No. And yeah. that's why they're scared of AOC, Ilhan Omar,
these that are Cori Bush,
right? These visionaries, yeah. Hakeem Jeffries. It goes on and
yeah.
on. You know,
yeah.
that's the generation you need, and they're terrified of that. And there is some hope in that. You know, we have a deputy AG right now who's a badass. Her name's right. escaping. African American woman from Brooklyn went yeah. to Yale.
Yeah. Letitia James.
Well, she's a New York AG, but there's another
oh,
one.
New York. Oh, there's another one.
Okay. Who's also a badass who went wow. to all their schools, kicked their asses, played their game, and beat them at it. And like an AOC or like Letitia James. So yeah, they're yeah. terrified. You know, these guys are scared. That's why I'm not scared, because I know they're cowards. It's like the last stands of a bunch of cowards hoping to keep it the way it is, because they want to protect life for their mediocre sons, right? They want you to like fail up, go to college, date rape for a couple years, get a law firm job because your buddy Ooh. Made a phone call, join the right? That's our
yeah.
system.
That is yeah. it, yeah. yeah.
And that's
wait, doing, right? That, something like that came out, email was leaked of Tucker Carlson.
Right.
Asking Hunter Biden to get his kid into, yeah, yeah, yeah. What was it? What was the school?
Some shit.
What was the school?
Like Georgetown.
Georgetown, right. Right, yeah. And the comedian and the guy, it was a damage report. The guy said nothing sounded any more elite than Tucker needed to ask Hunter to get his son into Georgetown.
Exactly.
Wow.
Tucker right. McNear. Tucker Swanson. Carlson. Dude's got four yeah. names.
Yeah. Tucker. Tucker, call Hunter.
Call Hunter. Well, maybe Biff can get us in there or Chad.
Oh, no. Chad.
Dude. Well, you know, it's funny because that's what what's her name? Mance. I want to say, was it Mance or it's not Mace, but it's the one out of North Carolina who called
Nancy Mace
who called Brobart out on her racism.
Right. Yes.
And then Green decided she was going to try to stand up for her homegirl. And she texts back the emoji with a bat, a thing of crap, and then and a clown. And basically, it was like, you batshit crazy. And she right. told the reporters on the steps of the Capitol. She goes, she's just doing this. This is how she gets money. Every time she does this, they yeah. start flooding her with money. So she's really a grifter. She's not even. She serves no purpose here. Mm-hmm. And
they all are.
And I think it's almost like the Republican Party needs. It's like when you're trying to catch the serial rapist and you need the one person to break the line that's bold enough to say something and take the threats for other people in the back to go, you know what? Nothing happened to them. So now I can start saying something, because right. there are people in that party that literally are ready to fight to throw these people out, but they seem to be like waiting for someone. I don't know who they're waiting for to actually be the person to basically go, you know,
Atticus
what?
Finch. They're waiting for Atticus.
No, it's not even Atticus. They're basically waiting for like Khaleesi to come in with a dragon
and just burn
the city down.
Exactly. And you think they would have done that shit? Not to cut you off, Stephen, but you think after January 6th, they would have been like, "This is our chance. Let's fucking kill this motherfucker, Trump." Now, right. not right. Know, metaphorically, like he's down. Let's kick him down.
Didn't what's her name, Cheney, try to do this?
She did. She is doing.
She
that.
She did. But the sad part is, and
she's
I think you mentioned this
herself.
On one of your podcasts, that the Fox News is such a prevalent force in terms of getting their voices out, right? Getting the opposition voice out. like Cheney will come on and talk about it, and then Fox News will like put on like five other opponents of her, right? Yeah. But CNN would do like only a 15 or 5 minute clip, and then move on to something else, you know. And nobody else would really, you know, it's not being taken
to the enemy.
And this is all neoliberal shit. This is neoliberalism shit.
Yeah, they're showing up with yoga mats and a fucking pilgrim sandwich when you're at a fucking gun battle. Like, this is Hamburger Hill. You need to walk up and bite a motherfucker's ear off. You know, you need to like get gnarly.
You know? So, remember that time that cat got punched in his face? The Nazi dude got punched in his face back in the. Who was that?
Those were good times.
I will say this. I will say this. Yes. Some cats just need to get cold cocked real quick. Like cough on. Instead of you know, doing a ambush questioning on video like they did with Matt Gaetz and Michelle Green and Green when they were Marjorie Green.
Right.
During that time, there was a point where, you know, they were outside rallying and there was something going on inside the Congress. They were talking about some other bullshit. And this is when it first came out that Matt Gaetz was getting, was being investigated. And instead of like, you know, I see people with their cameras, like really asking those hard questions. Instead of that, just somebody just run up and just cock him. Just clap, clap. Just punch him in his jaw. I'm sorry. You know what? I do advocate for violence on certain cases. It is not across the board.
It is, Crump cases. Is now and Kirk Johnson has chosen violence.
Violence. When people would ask me what the Trump family was like, specifically Don Jr., I'd be like, let me put it like this. The Dalai Lama would meet that dude and be like, yo, I just need to punch that motherfucker. You know? And the Pope would be like, I'll hold him, bro. I'll hold him. And you fucking, you just look at him. He was like that Martin Shkreli guy. Remember Martin Shkreli?
Wow. Yeah.
Yes.
It was that kind of thing. I ran into that guy once at the NBA All-Star game in Toronto. And I was staying in the nice hotel because I stay where the talent, you know, that's performing or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, he knows the deal. That's why I work in the talent department, because you get to live the same life and shit. Like, I got to, you know. So I'm walking into the hotel lobby, and, you know, you got them glass revolving doors. So I'm going through the door, and I see the dude who's going out. Is that dude? But it was Martin Shkreli, but I couldn't recognize it. And he sees me look at him and recognize him. And I'm like, you know, I get that look, and I walk in the lobby, and he's looking outside, and he still keeps eye contact with me, and he sees the exact moment that I recognize who it is, because I'm like, and he goes, yeah, I am that dude. Like, he goes, yeah, it is me. Yep. Like, he watched me until I realized, that motherfucker who bought the Wu-Tang album. That wasn't even a real Wu-Tang album, right?
Oh, that cat.
It's all good. We're about, believe it or not, we're almost out of time here. Noel, I want to give you a chance to plug what you're doing lately. I know you've got some performance dates coming up.
Yes, sir.
So hit us with that real quick, please.
Thank you, brother. Yeah, I'm going to be at the City Winery in Boston on December 23rd. Doing two shows, 6 and 9 p.m. It's going to be pretty lit. Come on out. A lot of the kind of stuff I talk about tonight, but I make it funny. And then I'm going to be back in New York City on January 26th at Iridium in Times Square, Les Paul's old nightclub, which is a cool jazz club. I play like music clubs. That's my city.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah, I worked in the music business forever, so that's like my comfort zone, you know, and I tell stories, like I do the political stuff for a half an hour, and then I tell rock and roll stories behind the scenes, you know, all that kind of good shit.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Stevie Wonder stories. I got some crazy Stevie Wonder stories. Stevie's you know.
Wow.
Let me say one more thing. Harlem Block Party. I did the block party when Harlem moved up. When BET moved up from DC, and we had a big thing at the Apollo.
We had the
and Stevie Wonder on that gig.
Ugh.
It was a late 90s. You know, that was, and it was a party. Wow. Remember across the street, that parking lot at elementary school?
Yeah, I remember that.
Barbecue. Mm-hmm. That was amazing. Just to harken back to the promise.
All right.
It seemed at one point, you know, when BET moved to town, it was going to be like a renaissance. And then,
it wasn't.
Yeah, I know.
And then they got rid of news and they sent Ed Gordon home, and then it was twerking videos.
Yeah, money became a thing.
And money became a thing. Gentlemen, real quick, what business do we have to close out with? I know we wanted to celebrate Tony Todd's birthday real quick, right?
Yep. Yes, Saturday was Tony Todd's birthday. Happy birthday to Candyman.
Yeah. Let me see. Yeah, we should shout out Speculative Fiction Academy where Mark is teaching. I'm doing SVP's Whining About Movies. I'll be doing Westerns and Christmas movies in two separate bits that you'll get to see over there. As always, we've got websites you can visit. Who is Mark L. Abbott, right?
Yeah.
And my website, www.laughingblackvampire.com for all your horror fictional type needs, including Hell at Brooklyn Tea, which you can see right there behind Mr. Johnson. Guys, all I gotta say is one last thing before we go. So I got rumor that my awful former boss, Dr. Oz, is running for the Senate. And I cannot begin to tell you, and we're not gonna get into all that because of course I'm just gonna sound like a disgruntled employee. So all I'm gonna say is vote for John Fetterman. And that's it. That's really all I got to say on that. Right, Noel?
Well said, brother.
Thank you.
Hey, man. All I got to say is I tried that kombucha. That shit don't work. Oz is a phony.
Yo, I like that shit. I was just drinking some before, man.
Man, I still weigh the same as I started. Fuck that guy.
Well, we not going to get into that, Kurt. But anyway, yes, Noel.
No, thanks for having me. You do the Dr. Oz. That guy's got deep ties with Turkish, like Erdogan and all this kind of. Start digging into him, it's going to get ugly, man.
Yeah. He's another one that needs to get stopped. And that's all I'm going to say on that. Gentlemen, thank you so much. This has been a rather exciting. I'm just so happy we did this. This particular episode of Beef, Wine, Shenanigans. Of course, brought to you by Speculative Fiction Academy and Laughing Black Vampire Productions. For Kirk Johnson, Mark Abbott, Noel Kassler, and myself, we bid you a fond adieu.